Vince, would you mind leading the prayer as we begin our class?
Let's go to prayer. Our Heavenly Father, we come before you now to study your word, to open our Bibles, and to listen to what Brother Darrell has prepared for us. We pray that you will be with him, and have a ready recollection of what he has studied. We are thankful, Father, for this opportunity that you have given us to study from your word. We pray that we will be continued to be guided and directed by your word. We are thankful for the opportunity we have, and we ask, dear God, that we can put worldly things out of our minds now for the next 45 minutes or so, that we can fully understand the material we're going to look at this evening. We are thankful, Father, for your Son, Jesus Christ, and it's in his name that we offer this prayer. Amen.
Thank you, Vince, and appreciate your prayer there. I don't think any of the material we have is going to be difficult to understand at all. But yeah. Well, if it is confusing, you know, let me know. So tonight we're continuing our study, our Wednesday night study, which is kind of a survey of Old Testament characters. And we're looking at characters that are less prominent than some others that you might think of. So in this class, we are going to be looking at Absalom, one of the sons of David. And this is actually going to be part one of two. So Philip is planning to be out of town this coming Sunday. And so he had asked me if I could do a class this coming Sunday, and, you know, given that I already was doing this tonight, it seemed like there was plenty of material to make this into two classes, so that's what we're going to be planning to do. So the first mention of Absalom that we have is in 2 Samuel chapter 3, and that's just mentioned in passing about the sons of David who were born. And there are there's a record here of some of David's sons who were born in Hebron. If you recall that when David had first become king, he was not king over all the tribes immediately. There was a battle between David and one of the sons of Saul. And also David was not king in Jerusalem at this time. So David had sons born to him in Hebron. And so 2 Samuel chapter 3, and this is verse 2 and 3, it says, "Sons were born to David at Hebron. His firstborn was Amnon by Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, and his second Chileab by Abigail the widow of Nabal the Carmelite, and the third Absalom the son of Maacah the daughter of Talmai king of Geshur." So some of these sons of David, we have record of what happens to them. Others, we don't know anything else about them. One of those would be the second son, Chileab. I don't think there's anything else mentioned about him in the Bible. But Absalom, as we said, is the third son of David, born to Maacah, however you pronounce that, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. From what I found, the name Absalom means "my father is peace." So, perhaps a little bit of irony in that name. David was a man of war, for one, but Absalom himself does not turn out to be a man of peace either. Didn't find much information on Absalom's grandfather, the king of Geshur, or the area itself. Does seem to have been a contemporary kingdom to Israel. It's not mentioned that I found in the Bible as, you know, a continual enemy such as the Philistines or anything like that. And as we know, David had a lot of wives, lots of concubines. This one wife being the daughter of a nearby king, you know, this does kind of point to the possibility that this was at least in part a political marriage. Don't know that for sure, but it just kind of gives that appearance. Just kind of setting the stage here for the study. We talked some recently about polygamy in some of the other classes, and the problems that seem to go along with it in the families that it's mentioned in, especially in the Old Testament. And this maybe would be the most extreme example of the problems you see when you have multiple wives and children in a household. So that does give some limited detail in the background for the events that we'll read about. I think what I'm going to try to do is to cover more or less tonight the events with Absalom, Amnon, and Tamar. And then on Sunday, we'll probably plan to look at Absalom's rebellion. Seems to be a good way to split it up there. And, you know, just one other thing. Because of the character studies that we've been doing, a lot of the events from week to week, they do kind of overlap with each other. You know, when we were talking about Joab, you know, covered some of the events. He was involved in some of the events with Absalom's rebellion. So, yeah, but hopefully we'll be covering things from, you know, slightly different angles. All right, so going back a few weeks, what event or events kind of set the motion for the set in motion the problems that we'll see tonight, beginning with Amnon and Tamar? This would have been our study with Nathan the prophet. So what did that study have to do with?
Consequences
for who? Yeah.
The sin with Bathsheba.
Yeah.
For David.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It said, this was 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 10. God said, "Now then the sword shall never leave your house, because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife." And I didn't have this in my notes, but the thought occurs to me that, you know, I think, Rick, you mentioned this about, you know, out of David's mouth, he had said regarding the parable that Nathan spoke to him, that the man should pay back fourfold. And in a sense, David pays back fourfold with his children, you know, over the years, as these consequences unfold. All right, well, let's go ahead now and read the account of Amnon and Tamar, and we'll look at Absalom's. We'll look at that just in and of itself, and then we'll go back and look at Absalom's response afterwards. So this is 2 Samuel chapter 14. So that's 2 Samuel 14. Let's look at verses 1 through 20. And it's kind of become, actually it's chapter 13, I'm sorry. Chapter 13, 1 through 20. And I'll enlist some help in reading here. So Zach, would you want to read the first 10 verses? And then Earl, would you want to read the second 11 through 20? Okay.
"Now Absalom, David's son, had a beautiful sister whose name was Tamar. And after a time, Amnon, David's son, loved her. And Amnon was so tormented that he made himself ill because of his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin, and it seemed impossible to Amnon to do anything to her. But Amnon had a friend, whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. And Jonadab was a very crafty man. And he said to him, 'O son of the king, why are you so haggard morning after morning? Will you not tell me?' Amnon said to him, 'I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister.' Jonadab said to him, 'Lie down on your bed and pretend to be ill. And when your father comes to see you, say to him, "Let my sister Tamar come and give me bread to eat, and prepare the food in my sight that I may eat it, and eat, or may see it and eat from her hand."' So Amnon lay down and pretended to be ill. And when the king came to see him, Amnon said to the king, 'Please let my sister Tamar come and make a couple of cakes in my sight that I may eat from her hand.' Then David sent home to Tamar, saying, 'Go to your brother Amnon's house and prepare food for him.' So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house took dough and kneaded it, and made cakes in his sight, and baked the cakes. And she took the pan and emptied it out before him, but he refused to eat. And Amnon said, Send out everyone from me. So everyone went out from him. Then Amnon said to Tamar, bring the food into the chamber, that I may eat from your hand. And Tamar took the cakes she had made and brought them into the chamber to Amnon, her brother.
When she brought them to him to eat, he took hold of her and said to her, come lie with me, my sister. But she answered him, no, my brother, do not violate me, for such a thing is not done in Israel. Do not do this disgraceful thing. As for me, where could I get rid of my reproach? And as for you, you will be like one of the foolish in Israel. Now therefore, please speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you. However, he would not listen to her. Since he was stronger than her, he violated her and lay with her. And Amnon hated her with a very great hatred, for he hated, for the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he loved her. And Amnon said to her, get up, go away. But she said to him, no, because this wrong in sending me away is greater than the other that you have done to me. Yet he would not listen to her. Then he called his young man to attend him and said, now throw this woman out of my presence and lock the door behind her. Now she had on a long-sleeved garment, for in this manner the virgin daughters of the king dressed themselves in robes. Then his attendant took her out and locked the door behind her. And Tamar put ashes on her head and tore her long-sleeved garment, which was on her, and she put her hand on her head and went away, crying aloud as she went. And Absalom, her brother, said to her, has Amnon, your brother, been with you? But now keep silent, my sister. He is your brother. Do not take this matter to heart. So Tamar remained and was desolate in her brother Absalom's house.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so Absalom is mentioned by name a little bit here, but this first part of the chapter, the narrative focuses on the events with Amnon and Tamar, and so we'll get into that just a little bit before we get into Absalom's response. So initially here, I guess as a preliminary question, who is Amnon's mother? We said it before, it was Ahinoam of Jezreel. So who is Absalom and Tamar's mother?
The daughter of the king of Geshur.
Yeah, daughter of the king of Geshur. And so what relation does this make Amnon to Tamar?
Half-sister.
Yeah, half-sister, half-brother. And obviously Absalom is full brother, full sister with her. What was Amnon's problem, I guess you'd say, as we started the reading here?
Lust.
Yeah. As he puts it, well, some versions, I think he says that he loves his sister Tamar or is in love with her, but it's, as the story goes on, it's obvious that it's not actually love. As Ben said, the problem is lust. So Jonadab, who's Jonadab?
Friend of Amos.
His cousin.
Yeah, actually a cousin, yeah. They actually cut them. So they come up with a scheme to get Amnon alone with Tamar. What does this say about their character?
Evil.
Okay, evil, yeah. Does it seem likely this is the first time that they have schemed to do evil in their lives. This is a pretty extreme action that they're plotting here. I'm going to say probably not.
Well, given the cousin's called crafty, apparently he's known for coming up with elaborate schemes.
Yeah. And this cousin of theirs, Jonadab, he's not just a cousin to Amnon. He's a cousin to Amnon or to Absalom, Tamar, and his advice results in terrible consequences for three of David's children, you know, who are his own blood relatives. You know, it really wouldn't matter whether they're blood relatives or not. I mean, it's still a terrible thing to scheme. But, you know, Jonadab comes back into the story just briefly later, but it doesn't seem that there's no indication that he has any remorse for any of this. You know, which is quite a poor example for us to consider what kind of person this was. And so they have this scheme worked out where Amnon will pretend to be ill, and he's going to ask David to send Tamar to prepare food and give it to him. And so the scheme works, and he orders all the servants out, and when she brings in food, he's at that point he takes hold of her. So, what does Tamar say to try to reason with Amnon or to try to convince him not to do this?
Well, you know, she says that, you know, go to my father, the king, and he will not withhold anything from you. So, you know, she's saying, you can have me, but in the proper way. That's how I read it.
That could be. I suppose it's possible that she's just trying to say anything to get out of the situation. But yeah, that's very much possible.
She's kind of unheard of in Israel, this sort of behavior.
Yeah.
She's trying to tell him, you know, don't bring shame. Don't
yeah. This, so. She kind of appeals to both of their reputations, really. She's saying, you're going to be looked at as a fool, and I'm going to bear the shame, you know, forever. I can't remember, I think this was a reference in my Bible that when she says this, or at least it references back to Genesis 34, I think, when the sons of Jacob and their sister Dinah, there's a man that violates their sister, and a whole set of events that happens there. So, yeah. So she's tried everything she can to convince him, but he's intent on what he's planning to do, and will not listen to her. So, if he had listened to her and taken and said, okay, I will take you as my wife, was this relationship allowed under the law?
No.
And we can turn over there for just a minute. Leviticus chapter 18. Leviticus chapter 18, verse 9, it says, the nakedness of your sister, either your father's daughter or your mother's daughter, whether born at home or born outside, their nakedness you shall not uncover. And the punishment, I believe, is down in verse 21. Actually, it's not 21. Maybe it's 29. For whoever does any of these abominations, those persons who do so shall be cut off from among their people. So, what does it mean to be cut off from among the people?
It means death, doesn't it?
I think that's generally what the case is thought to be. So, you know, again, we don't know if David for sure would have gone along with this or not, but we do know Amnon, he really broke the law of Moses in multiple ways here by what he did. And ultimately, it seems David does not hold him accountable for it according to the law. You know, yeah, whether or not David would have allowed it, Tamar does seem to think it you know, the prudent or reasonable course of action to go ahead and become his wife. So, you know, she views this as a preferable thing to living her life in dishonor. You know, it may be hard for us to understand, but it seems that a young woman's virginity was something highly prized in this culture. And, you know, a girl that had been violated in this way would find it very difficult to find a husband afterwards and have someone to provide for them that way. It's a very extreme set of circumstances. Traumatic, certainly just as much today as it was then, but perhaps the social consequences were more extreme in her day than today. Absalom's just entering the picture here. So where Earl left off in verse 20, it said that Absalom, her brother, said to her, "Has Amnon, your brother, been with you?" So let's pick up and we'll go ahead and read Absalom's response to this. And this is, again, beginning. We'll overlap again and begin in verse 20. Let's see if we'll get to read. Rachel, could I get you to read beginning of verse 20 to 30?
Then Absalom, her brother, said to her, "Has Amnon, your brother, been with you? But now keep Sabbath, my sister. He is your brother. Do not take this matter to heart." So Tamar remained and was desolate in her brother Absalom's house. Now when King David heard of all these matters, he was very angry. But Absalom did not speak to Amnon, either good or bad, for Absalom hated Amnon because he had violated his sister Tamar. Now it came about after 2 full years that Absalom had sheep shearers in Baal-Hazor, which is near Ephraim, and Absalom invited all the king's sons. And Absalom came to the king and said, "Behold now, your servant has sheep shearers. Please let the king and his servants go with your servant." But the king said to Absalom, "No, my son, we should not all go, lest we be burdensome to you." Although he urged it, he would not go, but blessed him. Then Absalom said, "If not, please let my brother Amnon go with us." And the king said to him, "Why should he go with you?" But when Absalom urged him, he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. And Absalom commanded his servants, saying, "See now, when Amnon's heart is married with mine, and when I say to you, strike Amnon, then put him to death, do not fear. Have not I myself commanded you? Be courageous and be valiant." And the servants of Absalom did to Amnon just as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose, and each mounted his mule and fled. Now it was while they were on their way that the report came to David, saying, "Absalom has struck down all the king's sons, and not one of them is left."
See, Ray Cummings, can I get you to read 31 through the end of the chapter?
Then the king arose and tore his garments and lay on the earth, and all the servants who were standing by tore their garments. But Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother, said, "Let not my lord suppose that they have killed all the young men and the king's sons, for Amnon alone is dead. For by the command of Absalom, this has been determined from the day he violated his sister Tamar. Now therefore, let not my lord the king so take it to heart as to suppose that all the king's sons are dead, for Amnon alone is dead." But Absalom fled, and the young man who kept the watch lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, many people were coming from the road behind him, by the side of the mountain. And Jonadab said to the king, "Behold, the king's sons have come, as your servant said. So it has come about." And as soon as he had finished speaking, behold, the king's sons came and lifted up their voice and wept. And the king also and all his servants wept very bitterly. But Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Ammihud, king of Geshur. And David mourned for his son day after day. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur, and was there 3 years. And the spirit of the king longed to go out to Absalom because he was comforted about Amnon since he was dead.
Okay, well, we'll go ahead and cover the rest of the events real quick that kind of bring this episode to a close. Absalom flees to his grandfather in Geshur after having killed Amnon. And in chapter 14, verse 1, it says that Joab perceived that the king's heart was concerned about Absalom. And we kind of covered a little bit the events with the woman of Tekoa last week. And does someone want to summarize that real quick? What happened with the woman of Tekoa?
Yeah, I just want to ask one thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was kind of interesting that Absalom asked his dad to go to that feast. David didn't go. I mean, it seemed to me like this guy was a very intelligent young man, and he thought long term, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of wonder, you know, if what would have happened if David had gone, which, I mean, he did, but...
Yeah, you almost get the... Like I said, he's a long-term thinker. You know, kind of in the same vein as this cousin, Jonadab. You know, and it's almost like he knows David is not going to go, so he's almost using it as a negotiation type of tactic. Well, all right, well, if you won't go, let my brother Amnon come instead, you know.
He waits 2 years to get revenge.
Yeah.
You know, and it's you know, this is not something that's going away.
No. So, He's given Amnon probably just enough time to think maybe it's blown over. It's kind of what it seems to be. Yeah, so.
It must have been festering.
Yeah.
Just building.
For sure.
But Andrew, at the same time, it's 2 years that something should have happened.
Yeah.
I think when the Bible says he really loved his sister, he really loved his sister because he named one of his daughters, I think, after her.
Yeah. What was the point you just made, Andrew? Because
2 years, David should have done something.
Yes. Yeah. 2 years. Yeah.
And maybe that's why Absalom invited David. It's like you should have been taking care of this.
Perhaps. I guess everybody's got perhaps their own things they think as they read this. I think I was thinking through this that the proper way for Absalom to have handled this would have been to go to David and say, hey, why haven't you done anything about this? But it doesn't seem that he does that. And since he doesn't do that, it makes me think that he possibly wanted this for himself, you know, in a sense. I don't know that for sure, but
his grandfather was really the only royal, you know. His grandfather was a king, and when he invited David to that part, I kind of wonder if it wasn't, you know, he was a succession type of thing, you know. I mean, and I'm all there and just kill them all, you know. I mean, I don't know, you know.
Jonadab seems like that this was all pre-planned.
That makes sense.
About David's lack of response is verse 21 of chapter 13. It says, when David heard all this, he was very angry. And mine, I think it's on translation that mine says in the footnote, but he would not punish his son Amnon because he loved him since he was his firstborn. And I'm just thinking about how so often people have this idea of loving somebody that they don't want to discipline. But like Proverbs 13, verse 24 says, whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent in discipline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think maybe aside to that, you can think about the fact that Amnon is, or, you know, David perhaps has enough guilt from what he's done previously that he has a hard time punishing his own children for some of these things. But they do seem to kind of just run loose to a certain extent here. Those are all very good comments. Anything else before we move on?
If David had rebuked Amnon for what he did, Amnon could have said, well, you were involved in sexual immorality, you took advantage of your position.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have relations with a relative, but you took advantage of your position with Bathsheba. I haven't done anything you didn't do.
Yeah.
And now he if he rebukes Absalom for killing Amnon, he can say, well, what did you do with Uriah the Hittite?
Yeah.
You had him killed.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I don't know if that's a part of what's going on in David's psychology, the reason he doesn't hold his children accountable. Maybe he felt a little hypocritical in doing it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's possible.
Or just one other thing. It's interesting that Amnon doesn't kill him himself. He has his servants do it. So it's not like he's taking personal.
It's
in a way. It's almost as if he's inflicting a judgment.
Yeah, and that's kind of a pattern with the way he seems to do things. He doesn't seem to be somebody that wants to get his hands dirty. He's definitely content to let others do his dirty work for him. You would think that if he had all this rage inside of him, he maybe would have wanted to be the one, but maybe he's too afraid to get dirty. And as we get into the next chapter, it talks about he's, the handsomest man in all Israel, and he weighs his hair yearly when he cuts it. So, he may have actually been afraid to get himself bruised up. Who knows? But Zach, do you have something?
I was just
going to
say, I think it's
a
character
development
that we see in David, because it's not just his sons, but his family in general, because Joab also has done things that are wrong. He's murdered two people, or at least eventually he does. And David doesn't actually take care of him himself. He puts it off on Solomon to take care of him.
Yeah.
So it's his family in general, it seems that he doesn't want to actually hold accountable.
Good point. Anything else? I don't even need to teach this class. I just say, what do you guys think? So the woman of Tekoa, this is part of kind of a set of events by Joab to bring Absalom back. And, Zach's class last week kind of changes my thinking a little bit on that. Joab is so loyal to David. And Israel seems to really think highly of Absalom. I'm not surprised if Joab kind of thinks, well, we need to bring Absalom back because he's the obvious choice to be king next. Because Joab seems to be loyal to Israel in many ways. So he brings Absalom back because of kind of a parable that they posed to David about a woman who has two sons and one kills the other. So this really kind of convicted David that he should bring Absalom back from exile. Although when he brings him back, he doesn't bring Absalom to see him immediately, so it's a bit of a mixed message there. So let's go ahead and, we've got, time's running out a little bit. Let's read the rest of the, well, we may just need to summarize it. So Absalom is brought back, and it mentions how he's, verse 25, in all Israel was no one as handsome as Absalom, so highly praised from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. There was no defect in him. Then it mentions how he cut his hair and weighed it yearly. It mentions his children. Absalom lives two full years in Jerusalem without seeing the king, and he's getting impatient. He wants to, I may be reading too much into this. Perhaps there's a sense in which this is still an unresolved issue you know, Absalom has not seen the king since he's been brought back, and he wants Joab to get him an audience with the king. Joab is not very quick about it, at least perhaps ignoring him. So Absalom tells his servants to set Joab's field on fire. You know, I guess it seemed reasonable to him at the time. I don't know. but he says in verse 32, it says, "Why have I come from Geshur? It would be," this is him talking to Joab, "it would be better for me still to be there. Now therefore let me see the king's face, and if there is iniquity in me, let him put me to death." So when Joab came to the king and told him, he called for Absalom. Thus he came to the king and prostrated himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. So that kind of brings this whole episode to a close. Absalom, I mean, if this is all that we had about Absalom, I mean, what would you think about him if you didn't know the rest of the story? I mean, does he seem all bad?
No. Defending his sister's dignity?
Yeah. Yeah. You could take it as someone who's just performing justice because the king failed to. And, you know, at the end, when he comes back, he does at least outwardly show some humility, you know, in front of Joab and to the king. So, yeah, I mean, he does have at least a thing or two going for him concerning his character. I guess we'll just skip.
Can't let go of a grudge.
Yeah, we've got 5 minutes left. We'll just kind of skip ahead here. What? Let me see what questions I really want to focus in on.
Hey, Daryl.
Yeah.
To the point that you made just a minute ago, you know, if we stopped right there, we might not have as critical, you know, opinion of Absalom as we do, knowing the full story. But people also change too as time goes on.
That's true.
Their hearts can become hardened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you think about events and other things happen, you can become hardened, or your heart can become softened. Depends on, you know, how you manage your heart.
Yeah.
And so his heart may have hardened over time to get to the point where he's going to do the things he's going to do in the next few chapters.
Yeah, very good point. We'll go to Zach and then Andrew.
I was kind of just getting me thinking about how Absalom has been seething over this for 2 years. He's passes judgment essentially on Amnon and then flees, and David doesn't seem to care. For 3 years, he doesn't seek him out or say anything to him. So he can just be dwelling on that and building up resentment about how his father doesn't care. And then David calls him back and then doesn't see him for another 2 years.
Yeah, so 5 years have passed. Yeah.
So there's a lot of time for him to just build up a lot of resentment for his father.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He doesn't respect his father.
No, that's true. Very true. You still have something?
I was going to say it's been 7 years since the time that the incident with Tamar happened to now.
Yeah.
It's basically the same thing. That's a long, and we know he holds grudges, so that's a long time to fester.
Let's see, Rebecca and then Joe.
You also have to think he's probably having to watch his sister during this time, and she probably hasn't completely recovered from this either, and that probably hardens his heart even more.
Joe.
Like I said, he's extremely intelligent and very, very, I mean, he had a 40-year plan here, man.
He was part of the political class, and he knew how to play that game very well. You know, he miscalculates in the end, but that's, you know, that could be as much God's judgment as in a sense a miscalculation. But Ray,
it's all big picture is this terrible dysfunctional family now as a result of sin with Bathsheba.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. I did have a couple of Just a couple of general lessons that we can take away from this whole episode. I can try and run through those real quick. First off, advice from family is not necessarily good advice, talking about the advice that Jonadab gives to Amnon. You know, this reminds me of Proverbs 1, you know, where it's talking about, my son, do not consent if sinners entice you. And it's basically young men saying, hey, come, lie, let us lie, lie and wait for blood, etc. This kind of advice reminds me of Proverbs chapter 1. Another thing we can take away, sexual temptation and lust, it's among the most difficult temptations that we can face as people. You know, this does vary from person to person, but as we said, it all starts with David, in a sense. Amnon is just as guilty. So sexual immorality is told, that's one of the things we're told to flee from. You know, don't try to say, I'm strong enough to withhold this and stay in the situation.
And you really see Satan's deceit here. Because here's Absalom, or Amnon, thinking, this is what I want, I have to have this. And as soon as he gets what he thinks he wants, he loathes himself and loathes Tamar.
Yeah.
And that's Satan. He does that all the time.
Good point.
With that, he's dwelling on it. When you're fleeing sexual temptations, you don't dwell on it. You focus your mind elsewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll maybe talk a little bit more about this Sunday. I'll just throw this last one in. Just because your father is righteous doesn't mean that you will be. And just because your father is wicked doesn't mean that you have to be that way either. So we have, although David set the wrong example for his children, he was repentant and a man after God's heart. But his children did not follow him in that example. All right. Thank you, everyone, for your comments. So bring them back with you Sunday morning. And we'll cover the next set of events for Absalom. Thank you.